This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 340 of the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Welcome to episode 413 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Linda Z.
Those of you who are newish, meaning we're back up to eight. Well, back up. We're at eight now. We were at six. I went down to five. In case you missed it, we are doing our summer's look. It's called Skanky Brunch. Or just brunch. And so I named our show.
It just keeps sliding.
It's okay. She did make the odds. I wasn't going to say anything though. She's like, you know, I look naked. And like, I wasn't going to say anything.
I did.
Okay. Back when it was just your forehead or your head, there was no naked. So you.
Well, I tried to get the microphone closer to my mouth, but also didn't want the giant red knob in my face.
Whoa.
It looks like a penis.
More on skanky brunch there.
There you go.
I have a cat in my hands, in case you can't see. So I'm making kissing sounds. I'm not kissing myself. I'm not having a tick.
So if you hear the kissing noises in a regular podcast, this is what's normally happening.
Yes, that's true. I usually try and take it out when I go through and edit, but since
what does a kissing noise look like in audio?
Oh my gosh. I don't know. Like a spike, probably.
Like a spike, but not like an
penis.
Yeah, the.
I mean, the looks like a penis sometimes. Okay.
This week, we will be continuing our An Echo in the Bone read-along with chapter 15 entitled The Black Chamber.
Back with Lord John. We're getting a little lesson about, I guess, an education here about black chambers and what they are. Apparently, according to Lord John, they exist. I don't know if this is current with today, but at the time of the 18th century, they exist in all capitals of Europe. They are centers where mail was intercepted en route or by spies or removed from diplomatic pouches. And then they were inspected, decoded, and then sent on. That information was sent on to wherever or whomever it needed the info. So, of course, this brought back, made me think immediately of
France.
Fraser. Fergus and Jamie and Claire, yeah, in DIA.
So does she just hold this little tidbit to herself or just discover it sometime between book two and book seven?
Who are you talking about?
Diana.
Oh. because I have not yet finished all of the Lord John novels. I believe, because that's like Lord John's main persona or a huge part of his persona. Yes, he's in the military, but he's also like a spy, right? He does intelligence work. So I would believe that Diana already knew this. And as a matter of fact, this may already be explained in one or more of the Lord John books. It's definitely the first time. It may have been mentioned before, but it has not been explained before in the big books that I remember.
Well, it's funny because she first mentioned it in the last chapter and then immediately followed up with this chapter telling us what it meant. So,
yes. So we didn't have to learn a lot about that. Now, Gray, Lord John, had worked at London's Black Chamber and he was going there now to meet with an Arthur Norrington. Gray has come to ask for his help to get more information that's an interesting preposition I just made up, on Mr. Beauchamp, or Beauchamp, sorry. But he has no joy, or not much anyway, because Arthur's like, look, we've got very little. I've only decoded one, but I have an idea about what the others are saying. But the big problem is, he's got a pouch of a very few files or a few letters, which is, you know, good. Once they're deciphered or decoded or whatever, he'll have some information from what was in there. But as for relating that information to a file that they already had, that already existed on Beauchamp, the file was gone. I'm calling it source files. I don't know if there was a better term, but the reason that there's not much information other than what's in this tiny little folder that has like three or four letters in it or something that still have to be deciphered is because the source files or the main file, basically his FBI profile is gone. Whatever is there, or CIA profile, whatever. But the, as I said, the papers that they did have were these letters or notes that that were in the process of being deciphered, decoded. And one of the things that John sees as he goes through them quickly is he notices the name Fraser. But he knew it was not Jamie. So he tells Arthur what he knows because he's there to get information or updated information about Beauchamp. And since the source files are gone and these letters that he does have, Arthur hasn't finished decoding, in order for Arthur to give him more information or anything he can or does have, he has to come clean kind of about like why he's there, why Beauchamp is such a big deal to him, why he cares. So he has to give up some information. It's like, why are you so interested in this dude? So he tells Arthur what he knows, that he is Percival Wainwright, etc., and that he was also his stepbrother, and that he had seen him in North Carolina. And Arthur's like, oh, got it. So he tells him most of what he'd gathered from the letters that he was had begun deciphering, decoding. Most of it was about shipping. And he said three of the letters mentioned the same name, Claudel Fraser. He said he had no idea who that was. Lord John says he does not know who that was, though he's pretty sure he has an idea. And
I have an idea.
I think most of us have an idea who have read. And then Gray tells him to look into Baron Amandine. So we'll see what Arthur comes up with. And then Lord John goes to visit the fam. He has to tell Hal about Percy because he has to tell him something. And then there's William's letter about Dottie and messing around with Dottie that he's like, I can't do all the things at once. It's going to like, my brother's going to like kill me or something, you know? And since Dottie isn't home, it's kind of, he's like, okay, Dottie's out at a friend's or whatever. And so he's like, okay, fine. I'll take care of this one thing. I wanted to talk to Dottie first anyway. Huh?
That is some short-lived relief.
Yes, very much so.
Because Dottie comes up very quickly.
Oh, yeah. After he talks to Hal. So he does the deed. He goes in and talks to Hal. They talk a little bit. And then as he's leaving, he runs into Dottie, who was just returning or who had just returned from her outing. And the first question he greets her with is, are you a virgin?
Awkward.
And she slaps him.
Do you imagine your uncle coming up and saying that to you?
My uncle? I can't imagine.
Yeah, any one of our uncles.
Oh, my God.
It would be inappropriate. I don't care how close. I don't know. I don't care how close I am with my
uncle,
mother's or father's family. That is not ever an okay thing to start a conversation or even enter a conversation into.
It's wackadoo. And then she slaps him, as I said, and he's like, let's go for a walk. Oh, they go for a walk in the park to get away from the house because they need to have the conversation and they cannot have it at home. So she gets impatient, and as they're walking to the park or through the park, she gets impatient and she's like, Uncle John, what is this taradiddle about? And I'm like, oh, that is a great word, taradiddle. So episode might be called taradiddle.
Because you wanted to say diddle?
Taradiddle. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's like,
you should just call it diddling.
Let's cut to the chase. I got William's letter, and he says that William did not tell me anything explicit, but he implied a lot. That's hence the question. And she says it's only true that she let him kiss her, meaning William, and it was in some lady's garden. And she lays it on. I love William. You have to let us be together.
What does he say immediately? Where?
Oh, well, that's about kissing.
I know, but he says, she says she kissed him, and he says, where? And then it gets really awkward.
And he goes, geographically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when she says, in some lady's garden, which is also a potential euphemism for come on. And then she lays it on. Won't you let me marry him? I love my cousin. Well, and then she wraps it up and says, well, anyway, we're in love. She does want Tim to go to Hal to ask for her hand for William. Lord John's like, why do you want to marry William? It's just, there's never been anything there before. This is brand new. What is going on? And he's quite critical of her as she's listing his attributes. He's like, why do you want to marry him? Tell me some of the things you love about him or like about him. And she's like, oh, he's so gentle. And he's like, he just threw someone through a wall recently. Mm-hmm. He's thinking in his mind, I put a lot of things, a lot of descriptions, a lot of good descriptions on William. Gentle was not yet one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really suspicious about her list because she did not mention his eyes once. And okay, to be fair, although I think we can believe Lord John, when we hear or think or see into his mind, see his thoughts, that his opinion is that many people are affected by his eyes. I think the like laying it on thick part, I think I'm not saying he's wrong that people aren't attracted by his eyes or find his William's eyes attractive, but the main reason that John gives for the eyes is because it's the eyes of Jamie Fraser, and those eyes make me go curdle wampus.
Right. That's really imprinting your own reasons for things on everyone else.
You can't put that on a girl who may not have her heart go tumble over itself at the sight of William's eyes. Just because every time you see William's eyes, you're reminded of Jamie, whom you've been in love with for 30 years, 20 years, whatever it is. Yeah, that's not, it's not the same. I understand he might be surprised she didn't include them, but to really hold her up to that, not fair. That's his own thoughts there.
Yeah, you can't impose your kinks on other
people. You can't impose your stick and your attractiveness and your, I mean, that's not a kink. I mean, Jamie may be his kink, but my point is it's not a kink to like someone's eyes.
You don't know.
But you can't impose even mentally your kink or whatever constitutes attraction to someone else and apply it to them and then say, you know, and hold them accountable for that. Absolutely not. And then he switches, not tactics, but switches questions. He's like, okay, fine. You've listed these things. What's the urgency? She's like, and he's thinking like, Are you with child? Like, what are you sure you're not ruined? First of all, he didn't say this, but he's thinking, is she ruined? Is she pregnant? Would she go that far? Like, oh my goodness. And Dottie says, and this was, you know, pretty, this is one thing that Lord John can't argue with. Dottie says that he could be killed in the colonies. He could be killed at any time. And he's like, well, you know, that's, you got me there, girl. And she says she wants to go to, she goes a step too far. She wants to go to America to be married. And this was like the step beyond. He's not that she would never get to the colonies, but to want to marry him and then to want to be sent off to America alone or even accompanied, you know, to meet him and be married there. Like that's like a bridge too far on this whole topic. And he's like, that's like your dad would probably say yes to marriage if we can, you know, convince him that you truly have feelings for William. He's not going to say no to Will. We love William. And if you guys are truly in love, like, great. But he ain't going to send you to the colonies in a war.
Mm-mm,
that's
no.
not going to happen. And he adds, Dorothea, I will discover what you're up to. And he says, even if Hal agreed to everything, there was no way it could happen. Even if he agreed to send her to America, there was no way it could happen until April. So we don't know how long that is yet, I don't think, because Diana does not give us a month for this chapter. But he is saying that, I'm guessing the whole April portion is due to weather and the on the open sea, right? So that makes sense. But he says, one thing to kind of calm your britches on is that battling pauses in winter. So for now, battle-wise, he's safe. He's like, yeah, he could get like all of these diseases, but we're not going to talk about those. So he's having all these different thoughts of like what might Dottie have done to make this happen or to force it through? Would she go so far as to get pregnant by someone? Not an unmarried person, because then Hal would, he probably is right thinking that Hal would have her marry the unmarried dude. But if it were a married man, that, you know, he's just wondering like how far she would go to force her father's hand and to get her way.
And then he compares her to Brianna.
Yes. He says he puts not much by Brianna. He says he's convinced Brianna would. Well, because he was a victim of Brianna's attempted force to marry.
Her coercion.
Yes.
Her blackmail.
Yes, correct. That's true. Forgot over that part.
And that was chapter 15. Do you want to check the comments? If anyone has anything to say.
Okay. So I see we are now at 10 people. But oh, hey, Lori says hello from Canada. Hello, Lori. Okay, we are pausing now at the end of chapter 16. Are there any comments for end of chapter 15. Any comments for chapter 15? What did you guys think of whether anything from the announcement? What, not really an announcement. If you've seen the video, you can chat about that. Or chapter 15 proper.
All right, moving right along to chapter 16 entitled Unarmed Conflict. Look, you have a date.
I was like, wait, who? Oh, got it. Okay, yes. We are in Inverness, Scotland, October 1980. And yes, not only do I love the fact that we're given a date and time. Well, a date and time. An expression of time. But specifically, we're in the 80s. I love this time. My only, not about this chapter, my only, not sadness, but I guess regret is that the show, and I know we're not talking about this, like we're not going to have a long conversation, but it has to do with dates and times and me saying I like the 80s or whatever. I like the parts of the books that are in the 80s. The only thing that I think we will not lose a great storyteller. They're going to do their best and we're going to get a great ending to the series, right? They will do well by it. If they are smart, which believe me, I know they're not dumb, but me saying that does not mean we're going to get what I'm about to say. I would hope that I would hope that season 8, the final season, is 16 episodes, because it's to this day still the biggest book. But it's got so much. So anyway, all that to say, the only loss in that, obviously, well, it's two big books of loss, but not, well, I don't know. I can't spoil because we're not on book 8 yet. But so I guess there's nothing much to say because I don't want to spoil. But basically, one of the things I really, really, really look forward to is this. I think, but more so in book 8, so hopefully season 8, these snippets from the Mackenzies in the 1980s are some of my favorite parts of the books. Besides what Frank knew, because this is, you can make an argument for this is related to what Frank knew, right? So some of the funny bugger stuff, which we'd find out more about in book 8, actually it is book 8 with the letter. But anyhoozle, this whole bit is just, I don't know why, it's just, I love it. So let's go. Okay. Inverness, Scotland, October 1980. I love these chapters. Brianna and Roger had a fight. She'd mentioned interviewing for a job and he'd not responded well. He's like, you got a job. Well, she had family responsibilities, right? She was home with the kids. And she's right though. She's like, I can't stay out of this field. I cannot continue to not work in a field much longer before I will lose my skills or lose more skills. And it had been a year since her last consulting job. So what does that tell us? not a year since they left the Ridge. Because Mandy's three, right? So it's been just maybe, I think they left when she was about 6 months. Maybe I'm wrong. Not too much after that. So they've been gone for 2.5-ish years at least. And we know they were in the colonies. They stayed in the colonies, or they stayed in North America, and then went up to their Uncle Joe, right? The Abernathys, who helped them through everything, right? Hosted them, helped out with Mandy, helped them get acquainted or reestablished, etc. So, but hearing this line, I don't think I'd remembered. I definitely don't remember this. I know I've read it, but I didn't retain it. The line, it had been a year since her last consulting job. So that means that she had been working in somewhere in one of her fields or in the field more than a year ago, or since they'd been back, I meant to say. And so that was, and we find out later, or a few sentences later, we found out it was in the, it was through the help of Dr. Joe Abernathy, who helped it, her connect her with the hospital. So there was some kind of consulting job that she did with the hospital. And Joe Abernathy had told Roger when they were staying there, or when they were in America, that she needed to move, meaning move around, see more than the four walls of those kids she was watching all day. And she needed to get out of the house.
Well, even look back when she was on the Ridge, she wasn't just in the house with the kids all day. She had jobs. She was building things. She was engineering things.
Correct.
It's hard to go from that, where while you technically didn't have a job, like they weren't paying you for a job, you were still busy doing more than just children and housework. So to be reverting back to a time where they expect you to just do housework and children had to be stifling.
Exactly. And so after their discussion about her consulting job and everything with Joe had happened in America, of course, now they're in Scotland, and this recent, I guess, fight or tiff that they'd had, it was about, or his response to her saying she had an interview was, they had a fight, I guess, but he, I don't know that he, that Dinah tells us he just ups and leaves, but he is now, the chapter opens with him. He's like out on a walk in Inverness. So I don't know if he walked from Lallybroch to Inverness or if he drove. We don't really get that. My guess is he must have walked because Brianna had to get to her interview somehow, and she's gone later on. So I'm guessing.
Doesn't everyone walk from Inverness to Lallybroch? Isn't that kind of the status quo?
I mean, yeah, it happens. It happens a bit. So he was on a what I take as a long walk to kind of blow off steam, but also get out of the house and, you know, whatever. And as he's walking, he's thinking, and we're seeing his thoughts, of course. And we learn about this whole thing is about them as a family, Brianna as a working mom or potentially working mom outside the home. And he's wondering if it's more, what is more of an issue with the locals? Namely, the fact that Brianna is Catholic, which is a problem, or the fact that she's now going to soon be a woman, quote unquote, abandoning her children to work outside the home. So we learn about a funny incident that had happened at Lallybroch with a Mrs. Ogilvy and some other lady had visited. Jem and Roger were shoveling dung, and they had, you know, had some nice words come out of their mouth as Mrs. Ogilvy and team come up behind them and saying, hey, you know, we're here to visit. And he said the missus is gone right now. Bree's in town, but we can have a tea made for you. And they say okay, and they basically tut tut about Bree not having been in church. And he's like, oh, well, I've got a reason for that. She's Catholic. So he's like, oh yeah, she'll be over at St. Mary's.
Reminds me of being at the optometrist. Better one, better two, better A, better B.
Yes. We find out a detail I don't think I knew, or that at least I remembered. Claire had not gone to medical school until Bree was 7. For some reason, I thought it was like when she was 4 or 5. But 7 makes more sense, because when she goes to med school, and even though I know it's not overnight, because they have issues at first, Frank steps up and says, you know, she can come to my office after work or after school, right? She can hang out there. I don't think he would have had, even if Bree were like a, I mean, maybe if she were a perfectly, quote unquote, perfectly behaved child, I don't see that happening with a 4 or 5 year old, but with the 7 year old, I could see 7, 8 almost. I could see that being a little more possible. So what I'm saying is, I knew Claire was at home for a little bit. I do not remember that she was home for 7 years. That's amazing. I didn't know she was home that long. Like, that shocked me.
We don't get a lot of that time.
You're absolutely. That's what I'm saying. I don't remember if the exact age had been mentioned before. If not, there you go.
It's because no one was interested in her and Frank anymore. They wanted her back with Jamie, so they had to fast forward.
Yeah, that's true. And so the question of, so this is, again, now we're back with Roger, not in the tea time with the Ogilvy or the fight with Bree, but on his walkabout, I guess. And he's going through, so he's thinking about Bree, thinking about the Ridge, thinking about, you know, Claire, what age Bree was when she'd gone to med school. This is all through Roger's thinking as he's walking. And this part's true. I won't say it's sad, but it is something we have to acknowledge, that Roger, understandably, it was not top of the importance list. But the question of Roger's ministry was seemingly dropped, or I should say it hadn't been picked back up since he'd dropped out of ordination school. I know it's not called that, but I think it's funny. In order to remember the end of, or near the end, kind of middle toward 3/4 of the way or so of book 6, he's literally about to be ordained, and Jamie comes by and picks him up and he's like, you'll come.
Isn't that where we left off, mid 6?
I don't think it's mid. I think it's like close. I think it's about 3/4 of the way. But it's
well, they also did move Bonnet a whole book forward.
Oh, see, yeah, you're okay. So you're switching the TV and the book. So book only. I'm only talking about the book. Yeah. So he had to not get ordered. He was not gonna, like, sorry, Jamie, father to my bride, I am gonna just stay here for the rest of the day or one more day. Let me get ordained and then we'll go look for my wife. No. So he left that, understandably. But, and then to go visit Bree. That's great. To go rescue Brianna from Bonnet. And then after that, of course, they go back to the Ridge. Eventually she has Mandy. So yeah, it's at least 6+ months before they. So maybe it is toward the middle-ish. But there's a lot that happens after that before they even go back to the future. So they had to talk. So once Bree was safe and the baby was born and they realized that Mandy would have to, you know, have surgery. And the whole focus was on getting back to the future safely, getting Mandy safely taken care of, and get her surgery. And then they had to focus on setting up their life. Like, what is our backstory? Where do we go? What's the best way? Where is it safe?
Where have we been?
That's, yeah, exactly, the backstory. What do we say?
Can I still access my bank accounts? Do I need a new ATM card?
Do they have ATM cards in 1980?
No, but could you imagine, though? It's even worse because you have to go into the bank to get cash.
And have an ID and, oh.
And then, yeah.
He couldn't go back to Oxford without a cover story, and that was not going to happen. Like, that was a bit much. Joe had recommended that he write a book about the regulation, and he's like, well, yeah, that's not a bad idea, but it would have to be like a novel. It couldn't be a historical book because I can't claim a citation of eyewitness by author.
Well, that, and he didn't see all the things.
No, but he could have definitely written, he had enough knowledge to write a book. He just couldn't cite it in the way that it would be accepted, scholarly accepted. But they knew they could very likely start in Scotland. So now that Mandy was well, okay, now fast forward back to his walking thoughts again. He's like, now that Mandy was well, Bree again would need to occupy her mind and her hands, and she would not be able to stay still and remain at home. They'd rebuilt their identities. They'd purchased Lallybroch from the bank that owned it. Jem was pre-moderately. I can't talk today. Jem was. I cannot.
Predominantly.
Jem, truly outrageous. Jem was more or less settled in school And they had a girl from the city or the, not the city, the city. They had a girl from the village to help out with Mandy. So they'd done all the things on their to-do list that were the most important. And now there really was no reason for Brianna to no longer look for a job. Speaking of her, Brianna interviews rather well. And she's offered a position. The guy doesn't even look at her CV, and she's offered a position at Pit Lockery in the next month. But she gets a little, like, suspicious. And when she gives him, like, forcibly gives him her CV, he's gobsmacked. And then she mentions that she's eligible, or she has the requirements. She meets the requirements to be a plant inspector. And then comes the sexism, right? He's like, but you're a girl, you're a woman. And she's like, okay, what part of being an inspector actually requires a penis? And he's like, the heck? Like, can you imagine someone even now confronting?
What if it's like a divining rod?
Oh, yeah.
And that helps them find problems in the dam. I don't know.
Well, the dam got problems. So, and he says, oh, but the work environment isn't suitable for a woman. Why not? He says it's physically rough. And what he meant was it's full of sexist men like him. So back to Roger. Roger's out on his walk and talk, self-talk, I guess, thinking about something. He makes a decision. We don't know yet what it is. And he calls Lallybroch and tells Annie, the girl from the village, Annie, I'm going to be gone overnight. I'm going to Oxford. I'll be back tomorrow. So when Bree eventually gets home from her interview, she finds this out. She's not happy, but she realizes that she'd gotten what she wanted. Not only a job, but maybe a little bit of some space from him. She doesn't want him gone, but maybe this space is a good thing for a night. But she's more upset that he didn't tell her and the kids personally before leaving. And she wonders if her parents had made it back to Lallybroch when they'd returned to Scotland. Because remember, the last letters that they'd read, they were intending on heading to Scotland. And she does, which kind of surprised me, because again, it's been a bit since I read this book. And I did not remember that she read a letter on her own, because they had normally read them together, she and Roger. She opens the box of letters and begins to read one. Offices of Loignon, New Bern, North Carolina, Colony of North Carolina, April 12th, 1777. This is Claire writing. She tells of being held up. So this is the way Diana tells us the part of the story where after Claire and Ian have left the ridge. They've had, the last time we were with them, they were sleeping on the first or second night, and Ian hears his aunt and uncle making whoopee and tries to ignore them. And then he goes to town, like he goes through a list of women in his head, like who's it? Like, I can't do Brianna because her dad's right there, and her mom, but mostly her dad. Who's safe, right? Like we marry safe, his first girl that he ever did it with. In Edinburgh when he was 14 or 15. So he settles on her and then does that. And that's how the chapter ends. So that's the last we've gotten of the Frasers, right? So it's in this letter or through this letter that we get the basics of what happened to them on that trip. She says that they were held up by would-be bandits of ages 9 and 11. So we have yet to hear the story. They're named Herman and Vermin. And so they take them along to try and find them a place to stay. Jamie had heard. So the kids had mentioned that their last name they believed was Kirkendall. And so Jamie's like, I think I've heard of. I know of someone named Kirkendall. Like I know there's a dude. I know a dude or a family, just one, but we can try them. And so Ian took Herman and Vermin and goes to find the Kirkendall cabin, while Jamie and Claire go to the coast, go forward on to New Bern, continue on. and they're staying with Fergus and Marsali. So I did it again. Oh, whatever. So Fergs and Marsali and the kids are well. Jamie is out and about with Fergus on business and inquiring about possible ships to take to Scotland. Claire, meanwhile, has set up her shingle to do medicine or medical work for a price. She's playing doctor. P.S., the letter says, Jamie is going to call at the Wilmington Gazette and see just who put in the notice about the fire.
Yeah, I want to know who did that too.
I think we will soon, maybe. Ish.
That was chapter 16, moving right along. We will complete this week's read-along with chapter 17, entitled We Demons.
So as we said, Ian is with Herman and Vermin, taking them to the one family that Jamie had known of, named, I'm going to say Kuykendall. I'm probably going to butcher that.
Kuykendall?
I don't speak Dutch. Huh?
Looks like Kuykendall.
Ah, it might be that. And it wasn't a good sign, though, that when they got there, they were greeted with guns or a gun. So, and the gun goes off and they take off. So as they're taking off, Clarence makes whatever. Okay, that was not a, I don't want to make the sound.
Donkeys don't sound like that.
No, they don't. But I don't want to make a donkey mules. Sound because it will hurt all of our ears. So Clarence, who was, okay, sorry, that was metal. Clarence, who is known for making really loud but joyful and probably somewhat adorable sounds, when he sees someone he recognizes, made this noise, and he screeched or whatever it was, and that's a little worrisome, right? Because the only person who's around him that he knows is Ian. So, what are Jamie and Claire? Did they come back? No. It was our old favorite, Archbug. So Arch had obviously been tailing Ian. And by the time he turns around and sees Archbug, he had an arm around Herman's throat. And he asks Ian where the gold is. Vermin, who had been out of the picture, rushes at Arch, telling him, let her go now. So now we've got like pronouns in the game, new pronouns in the game. And it got kind of messy. Arch was, he was like, basically a game of kind of like chicken, right? Arch is like, tell me or I'll snap his neck or I'll cut her throat, his throat. And first, Ian's like, yeah, I don't care. Because obviously he's trying to play it down so Arch doesn't think that these kids mean anything to him. And they really don't. I mean, he doesn't know them, but he obviously doesn't want the kids to be killed. But he also is not going to give away information about the gold. And so what ensues is Arch is tackled or rushed by Vermin, and he gets knocked down, and basically it's one of those cartoons, why I yada, and he's like, don't worry, this is not the last you'll see of me, dude. And he goes off. Ian,
I feel like
has,
he needed a twirly mustache.
Exactly. Ian does think, like, I need to go out to this dude, but he had a choice, right? He either prioritizes Bug and leaves these kids to get into a who knows what mess, or he stays with the kids and does what he can, as he promised Jamie he would, to get them settled somewhere. And Arch will, if it's important to Arch, which we know it is, Arch will find him again. So Arch is for another day.
These kids are so funny.
But I know, they're so, especially with the way Davina does them. It's, oh my God, it's very good. It's one of her best, some of her best. But remember the pronoun her. Or her, yeah, her. So he's like, wait a second, what? And he checks. He does not check the lower bits, but he pulls out the shirt of one of them. And I'm guessing confirmed, I guess she had boobs or little boobs, whatever. I don't know. But he's confirmed something. He's like, okay, it's a girl. And he's like, okay, yo, what up? Tell me what's going on. What is it?
What are your pronouns?
How would you like me to address you? What are your pronouns? What are you... What are your real names? What do you do? What do you do for a living? Their actual names are Hermione and Ermintrude, which are Big names
close to
for
Herman
girls.
And Vermin.
And the girls say, "We want to go to London. Take us to London." And he's like, it turns out it's very sad. So their parents are dead, right? And the reason they want to go to London is because they remember their mother telling them that they were from London, or at least been in or to London. So that's what they remember, and that's where they want to go. They have a lovely conversation as Ian is deciding what to do with them. So it's off to Mrs. Sylvie's.
Because that's the only thing he can think of, like, for real. He doesn't think that Fergus and Marsali could use a couple of...
It's got a cooter. It's got to go to the whore. What?
I'm just saying.
What that's was that face
really
for?
The... Oh, you said cooter. And that sounds weird.
I don't want to say the actual word.
Well, I'm just saying there's got to be some other options.
There, I mean, okay, at this point, if they didn't have family, if that I don't like saying Kuykendall because that sounds really close to something really bad.
Just say Kuykendall.
I'll say Kuykendall, which I know is wrong. If this cabin is not the right people, we're still not 100%. It's not been proven they're not the right people. As far as like, there's no way they're connected, but we know they're not the right people because if they stay, they'll get shot. So for all intents and purposes, they're the wrong people. So knowing that that's not an option, like he could have taken them forward back to Jamie and Claire, but then what were they going to do in the coast? Can you imagine those kids in the city? I mean, it was, I wouldn't want to travel with them. And I did not write down all of the descriptions that we get from Ian or through Ian from Diana. Like they are lice ridden. Their hair is, I mean, their heads will have to be shaved. They stink to high heaven. Just go with it, right? Imagine.
Well, I mean, they're two small children who've been taking care of themselves.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't blame them. I'm just saying he doesn't want to, I don't think anyone would want to be around them any more than they needed to. So he goes to Mrs. Sylvie's and says, "Hey, I brought some little girls. Maybe you could apprentice them."
Like, For real. Like that.
Apprentice for what?
What a time period. What a time to be alive.
Yep. And she's like, but he's like, apprentices, but not whores. And she's like, what use do I have? And he's like, well, surely you have maids or people who come in and like do the wash, do the food, do the seamstressing or whatever, you know, the mending. Like there's all kinds of things you can help them with, you know, teach them to read or whatever. And Mrs. Sylvie's like, so he pays her well. I think he said, or Diana writes, it was approximately 50 pounds worth of gold. And still, even with that, he says, I still think I would have got the better bargain. Meaning, even having received 50 pounds of gold, Mrs. Sylvie still doesn't have the better side of things. Because it's not just paying her, right? He's paying her. But
he also kind of really owes her now.
She really deserves two sums, right? One for her to pocket and one for her to use for their welfare. She truly deserved two different things. And I know.
Not if they're going to work.
That's true. That's true, but they still cost her money to feed and house.
Yeah, but it'll save her money by not having to hire someone else to do it. I mean, there's...
That's true.
Capitalism.
Oh, Lord. That is true. So, basically, they can be apprentices, anything but whores. So, as he is about to leave, Hermione is about to follow her sister in. They're about to go have breakfast. Hermione ends her time with him. She turns around and says, quote, and I'm not going to do the accent because I cannot do it. I cannot do it justice. And it's just so stinking funny when Davina does it. If we turns out to be whores after all, If we turn out to be whores after all, you fucker, I'm going to hunt you down, cut off your balls, and shove them up your arse.
Stuff, not shuff. Shuff is not a thing.
That's what she wrote, though. Shuff.
Stuff. It says stuff.
Oh, that was my typing then. Sorry.
Yeah, that's your
typo. I was thinking maybe it's shuff instead of stuff.
No, it's stuff.
Okay.
Stuff them up your ass.
They both work, but Yes. I believe that it is stuff.
These two. I almost wish they... Do they come back? I'm trying to remember if they come back.
I'm not going to spoil it.
Okay, fine. I hope they come back.
I'll tell you
I don't
off,
remember if they
off,
come back.
Off video.
I feel like they come back. I feel like they come they, back.
Who knows? We shall have to see.
Okay. Well, that was chapter 17. Does anyone have any commentary about Herman
Shoot,
and Vermin?
I think it's chapter 16. Oh my gosh. That's I'm so okay. sorry, you got it. Oh my gosh. So Liz, this is back about chapter 16, 15. So we'll go back. Mm. Liz M. Kind of confused about the black chamber bit. Not familiar with espionage. I don't, is that the right word? In any case, the London politics. So yeah, all I know, honestly, about it, I have not researched it. All I know about the black chamber or black chambers is what Diana tells us. My guess, okay, so chamber, all that means is room, right? It's from the French of chambre. It just means room. But using the word chamber sounds a little more fancy or ominous, right? Black is, I think, what gives it the real ominous quality. In like it, black harkens danger, evil, unknown, secrets, that kind of thing. And that makes sense for espionage, right? It's unknown, it's secret, all of that. So a black chamber makes perfect sense for a place where espionage work was being done.
But it also reminds me of, like, you know, those documents that were taken and weren't supposed to be taken. They were classified and some of them were listed as that you're not even allowed to take them out of the room.
Oh, yeah. They weren't supposed to be out
so
of the
room. So it
would
skip. Be kind of like that.
Yeah. So I hope that makes sense. And remember, he said that, or Diana writes through John, that all, at least at this point, I don't know about today. I mean, today, I think we all know, yes. But at this point, according to John, Lord John, and he would know, at least in Europe in the 18th century, 1770s, every capital city in Europe had a black chamber. So it wasn't just a place where it happened. It was like saying, an MI, I'm making this part up, but like if MI, so MI6 or MI5 or whatever, like CIA, right? Some institution.
It's like a library. Every city's got a library.
Huh? Oh, yeah.
It's like a
but
library.
Some institution
got a library.
That handled espionage, and the reason it was called the Black Chamber was for the reasons I already gave. So going forward, when we're back with Ian and Herman and Vermin, Liz also asks, how old is Ian at this point? It's been approximately 10 years, right? Since the way I remember, I don't remember the years so much because I don't remember. I know years people left the future. I don't necessarily keep track of the years that were back. Well, cause now we know it's 1777, so I guess we can say that.
But he's been married and lost a child.
Yeah.
And
so if it's 1777, let's just say it's 1777. If that's true, he was a baby when just before Jamie was arrested after 7 years. So Culloden, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51, 52, 53. So let's say it was 53. So it's 53 to 77. So he's a... And that just fits nicely with about 10, they've been in the new world for about 10 years. So he was kidnapped when he was 14. He turned 15 somewhere along the way. So he's about 24.
It's a respectable age.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, and that's all we got.
Again, a special thanks to co-producer Linda Z. And to find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you can't get enough of talking about Outlander, feel free to join our group at www.outlanderpod.com/group. Interested in any Outlander Pod branded merchandise? Well, go to our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop. I can't say that.
It's okay. We understand. And if you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, the Outlander Pod Gazette, please do. You can find us at outlanderpod.com/newsletter. And thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group Follow us on Twitter and Instagram @OutlanderPod.